What in God's Name is in Summer Replay. Please enjoy our top conversations from this program year. If you have ideas for interesting guests, for future shows, drop us a line. We are always and ever grateful for the ways our listeners support our work. You can support our work by leaving us a review. You can join our roster of donors at patreon.com and get on our mailing list at whatingods.com.
The New Hampshire Council of Churches featured What in God's Name in conversation with a live audience on November 2, 2022. Today's show is a recording of that program. What is the role of theology and philosophy in these polarized times? Keep up with these and other questions. Sign up for our newsletter on our website, whatingods.com. Become a supporter of our work on Patreon at patreon.com/whatingods. And now here's our moderator for today's show, Heidi Heath of the New Hampshire Council of Churches.
Friends, thank you for being here this afternoon. It is indeed a gorgeous day, and so we're especially grateful that you are spending time with us. I'm really excited about this conversation. I'm the Reverend Heidi Carrington Heath, and I serve as the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Council of Churches. And we are thrilled today to welcome my friends and colleagues, the Reverends Chris Owen and Shana Appel. Chris is a teacher and a writer, a minister, a boat builder, which might be my favorite fact about him, and a filmmaker. And he is also a UCC minister. And Shana is a former firefighter and paramedic and serves as a chaplain to a number of our fire departments here in New Hampshire. She is also the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Milford, New Hampshire, and is an ordained minister in the UCC with standing in the UUA. So we are living out our ecumenism here in this conversation today. And together they are the podcast team for What in God's Name, which is what has led you all here for some conversation today. So friends, I am thrilled to welcome Chris and Shana here today. And friends, I'd love to invite you to introduce us to What in God's Name. Tell us a little bit about this podcast, what it is and what it's not.
Thank you so much, Heidi. And it's so wonderful to see you all. And one of the key concepts of our project is conversation. So we're hoping to engage in conversation later on. First, it'll be helpful to put some parameters around, as Heidi says in her question, what we are and what we do. Our mission is to deepen public conversations and to deepen public thinking about our shared common life using the lenses of theology and moral philosophy. Two things to note about our mission. One is that we don't say to deepen political conversations. We believe that public life is bigger than the political, and it often gets confused. So, for example, if you think of deaths of despair in our culture, addiction, suicide, mental health, those are public questions, but not immediately political questions. They have to do with psychological and spiritual health and moral health, I would argue. So that's just an example. Our shared common life is bigger than our political life. We also say that we use theological and moral philosophical reflection, and that is because we want to talk to a plural society where not everybody has theological commitments. So our mission, to deepen conversations about our shared common life using theology and moral philosophy. The difference we want to make is to get the fish to become aware of the water. Americans, we believe, are the fish. So our focus is American culture. The water is political and economic thinking. We swim in political and economic concepts, frameworks, ways of thinking so thoroughly that we are unaware of them. You may disagree with this, but I tend to agree with, he's a University of Virginia sociologist, James Davison Hunter. And he says the most important questions we face, don't have political answers. I agree with that because I think, for example, here's a crucial question that I do not think has a political answer. Is there such a thing as truth? I see that as a moral question. It certainly has political ramifications, but it's not, in the first place, a political question. Finally, the one more thing I would say is we propose these things as hypotheses. We want to think with you and have conversation. That is just a key piece of what we do.
So I'd love to hear a little bit, now that you've given us some framework, and as someone who's listened to your podcast for a long time, I've felt curious, what's your origin story? How did the two of you come into this conversation, and how did this podcast take root?
Chris started it. Chris started it, and you'd have to really get that background from him, because I feel like I kind of got brought in late in the game. And
so just briefly, and I would invite you to do this, I began to pay attention to not the news, but to what the news was. In other words, when I was listening to news, I was listening for, how is this being framed? How is this particular issue, this particular question being framed? Over and over again, even on your most favorite and my most favorite news sources, it's framed politically, not all the time, or economically. And I ask myself, why? Why is this? And what is the underlying theological reflection that can be done on this particular question? Or what is the underlying moral question that this frame of politics is really concealing and not lifting up? With that observation, I thought, because everybody else has a podcast, what the heck, let's have a podcast. I was going to do it alone. I heard Shana preach at an ordination. I was like, I would like to be in conversation with that person. And that's the genesis of what we have. By the way, let me say this. Yes, we're a podcast, and we aim to be a project that expresses itself as a podcast, and we're looking for other ways to express ourselves as well. So I just want to put that out there as well. But anyway, origin story. That's the origin story that I tell. Shana, what do you tell?
Chris seems to think we met at that installation. We didn't. We had met beforehand. I had gone to an association meeting and saw a film that Chris had created, and it was absolutely brilliant, and I was just totally blown away. But I was also one of probably 50 or 60 people who went up to talk to him afterwards, so I'm not surprised that that he didn't remember us having met then. He asked to go out and have coffee and said he was thinking about doing this project, and would I be interested in participating? And I thought, God, this guy is so creative. Wow. I mean, really? Me? Okay, sure. And first you're going to tell me what a podcast is. So it's been a steep learning curve for me, but a great project to be a part of. And, you know, speaking of things that I hear for the first time, you know, when we're live on the air, Chris, this is the first time I've ever heard you say the piece about trying to get our listeners if our listeners are fish, then to try to get them to become aware of the water that they swim in. And I love that analogy, because I think culture is the water that we swim in, those patterns of thought and habits of behavior that develop without a whole lot of thought or critical thought, right? It's culture. It's It's the water we swim in. And so there's a certain way that we learn to move through that water without having to think very much about it. But I would absolutely agree that one of the things What in God's Name is trying to do is to make us more aware of that. And one of the ways we do that is by shifting the conversation. So getting it out of the politics and economics that so overdominates conversation in the public square these days. But does that answer the question, Heidi? I know I kind of went back to the first question a little bit, but...
No, it does. Thank you. It gives us a little bit of a sense of how you came into this particular conversation and this project together. And I'm finding myself curious. I'm going to ask one more question and then invite us into some broader conversation. But when folks first learn about this project and learn about the podcast, what are some common misconceptions? What are some things that come up that might be misconceptions about the work that you're doing?
One natural thing that everybody does, and I'm not so sure it's a mistake as it is evidence of how we swim in this water and are unaware of it. And this happens in all kinds of different contexts. But very likely one of the first questions that someone would ask of themselves is, whose side are these people on? Meaning, of course, political. And so if I say neither side, the next mistake would be to say, oh, they must be purple. And the answer there is no, that's not what we're aiming for. We're aiming for something that looks a lot more like conversion to a different way of seeing than it looks like moderation of a color scheme that we all accept. So that's, I would say, the fundamental but very understandable. Again, I'm not sure it's a mistake, but rather evidence of how we are conditioned to approach public questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's really spot on, Chris. Because I think the area that we're trying to move conversations into does transcend left and right and looks not at sort of what divides us first, but looking for or trying to find areas of broader commonality.
Friends, I wonder, a number of you have come to join this conversation today. And so as we dive in together, do you have questions or curiosities for Chris and Shayna, or things we might share with one another as we get started? And if you were willing to share, I'd be curious what led one or two of you to this conversation today. Why this topic? What piqued your interest?
This is Anne Rood. I'll say that I like the NPR show On Being and find that very thoughtful. And so I think podcasts seem to be a great way to get in-depth thought and in-depth information. So I thought I'd hear what this one was about.
Thanks, Suzanne. It's so interesting to me that in this time, particularly podcasts have taken off because, of course, a podcast relies solely on the spoken word, right? And it feels, or it felt like for so long, we had really drifted away from that, you know, and people really got so accustomed to the spoken word on television, which is 7 minutes interrupted by 4 minutes of commercials, right? So those, you know, those short little snippets, and now you have these podcasts out there, and there's a lot of them. So it's a really interesting format to see it come back to this, and good to know that people are out there listening.
One piece of feedback we got last year was, you all are doing this kind of theological and moral reflection, but what are you doing with regards to helping others do it? And so, as I mentioned earlier, we are a project that currently expresses itself mostly as a podcast, but one of the pieces of the project that we're working to develop is an educational component. because we want to provide resources, be helpful for other people who want to engage in a deeper way.
Don Barry, I saw your hand.
So I'm always curious about ways of bringing public conversation into congregations, mm-hmm. so that they are not so divisive. I usually labeled it that the Bible is pretty political. Yeah. I like the public idea, but political comes from polis, meaning city, public affairs, the way we organize ourselves. But what's happening is it's becoming so bitterly partisan. Mm-hmm. You know, when I work on racial justice issues and bring that up, it becomes labeled, the way of dismissing it is, well, that's political. It doesn't belong to the church. Mm-hmm. Right. And so finding ways of engaging conversation that doesn't break down into them and or us. Finding ways of looking at something with a different framework, which often I find biblically and theologically does help. But even interpretations now, people don't know their faith. And they're led by a faith of the commonplace. Which again is very partisan, very, very divisive. And so trying to break through that is always a struggle for me. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. It makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I think, Don, some of the challenges that we're facing in the church today are the influx of culture into the church. How much culture, American culture, has impacted various faith traditions as opposed to the other way around, right? And it should be, in my opinion, it should be the other way around. It's our faith should be molding, you know, the culture, not the culture molding the faith. And that is the challenge, to become aware of the culture and how it's impacting us, and then to be able to go back and say, okay, well, if we were to just put that on a shelf for a moment and start at a faith perspective, what would that call us to? How does it call us to approach that issue differently, which is that place where Chris is such an extraordinary partner in conversation, because I tend to be a political animal. So, you know, left in a cage by myself, I will dwell in the politics and spin and make myself completely and totally mishugana. Chris is the one who consistently will, you know, reach into the philosophical or the faith-based perspective and bring that conversation out there. And by being his conversation partner over these last couple of years, I am now learning how to do that. And what we're hoping to be able to do is transform a listening audience into partners in conversation so that you will all learn how to do that as well. And I think that is probably what a lot of you who are in leadership in, you know, various faith traditions are engaged in your congregations, you know, getting folks up out of the so much flotsam and jetsam, right? Getting folks up out of that into a slightly more elevated place of spirit and heart, you know, and let the conversation come from that.
Let me just also respond to Don, because I thought you articulated that you articulated your experience and how you feel and the obstacles you run into, and I share them. I resonate with them, especially with regards to this project. And two things come to mind. One is, and this does come up as I think about the ways that we want to grow our project, which is there's a key piece of this, which is Christian formation. So as I said at the very outset, part of our audience is, yeah, we are talking to Christians. We also want to talk to the broader culture, so we recognize pluralism, but certainly Christians are part of who we are talking to. And so there's this piece of Christian formation. How do we form ourselves, to use explicitly Christian language, form ourselves in Christ, not form ourselves in party or politics or culture, as Shana has said. So Christian formation is the first thing. The second thing, Don, And this gets tricky. We recognize that we want to be in conversation with people who might disagree with us. The question then becomes, is there a line beyond which we don't want to engage people who disagree because they disagree on the disagreements seem to be so fundamental that we can't even be in conversation. We can't even be in dialogue. And if that line exists, and I think it does, where is the line?
So I've seen a few hands, Gordon, and then Phil, and then Shelley.
Pleasure to be with you all. When I listen to the podcast, I will admit a lot of times what I am, I'm fascinated by the broad conversation, but what I'm listening for is tools. Because I feel like a lot of the work I do is engaging in this same conversation, but in a subcontext. I am fascinated by this conversation in the context of the public square and society. As you both know, as you know what I do, I really engage in this conversation with 132 congregations. And I was fascinated by the analogy that Chris used about the water we swim in. I would make the case that many of our religious communities, our institutional communities, swim in that same water of politics and economics and are completely unaware of it. And part of the conversation I want to bring is, can we become more aware of that's what we swim in as religious communities and bring those lenses that you talk about of theology and morality, our decision making, and particularly to our visioning for who we need to be as religious community.
Great question.
Is everybody familiar with the story of the two little fish who were swimming along one day, and they came upon an older fish was swimming in the other direction, passed him and said, "Morning, boys. Water's beautiful today, don't you think?" And the two little fish swam on a little while longer, and one of the little fish looked at his friend and said, "What the hell is water?" That's the sort of the content, the backstory for this conversation that we're having. I do think there is a lot of water out there, and I think that I think it's also a reality that if you want to enlighten a fish, you really kind of have to grab it by the tail and lift it up out of the water. I mean, it's not until the fish hits air that the fish instinctually understands water. And what we know about fish is that that's not a comfortable place for the fish to be, right? And once we pull the fish out of the water, it's going to fight and it's going to squirm. And it's literally suffocating to get back into, you know, that water. I don't mean to be alarmist, but it's beyond time for the church to come up out of the water and deal with whatever discomfort we need to deal with. Because the rate at which change has happened around us, change that we have not responded to for way too long, has left us in a place where most people think that the church today is irrelevant. And while obviously we know about the great work that the church is still engaged in, I also know that to a large extent, a whole lot of stuff that we're engaged in is irrelevant. And so it's time for us to have those hard cuts. It's time for us to come up out of the water where we're comfortable and deal with whatever discomfort we need to deal with so that when we go back into that water, we will understand it better and be able to swim as enlightened fish in that water.
Gordon, just as a question of clarification, when you say looking for tools, do you mean tools for church leaders?
Yes, but maybe not necessarily the elected church leaders. Tools for people in these communities to know how to have these conversations outside of the way we're normally taught to be in the water. Which is what you all do. I mean, that's what makes your project, your podcast brilliant. I'm just applying it to a more focused context.
And we want to apply it to a more focused context as well. Like we share that goal. So we're working on it.
So Chris, I want to get back to something you said, if I could too, because, you know, we talk about sort of what is the line that makes a conversation impossible? You said, is there a point at which disagreement can be such that it prevents a conversation from continuing? I don't find any range of disagreement to make the conversation unattainable or unactionable until a person is closed down, to another point of view, will not hear another point of view. That's what, you know, at that point, then, you know, I'm reminded of something my mother used to say, right? Never try to teach a pig to sing. It annoys the pig and makes you look like an idiot. Don't cast your pearls before swine. I mean, if somebody's not interested in being in the conversation, then, or they just, you know, they have the point at which they've come to and that's it, and they're really not interested in hearing what's beyond that, then I think there's no way to get beyond it. So there's no real point. I think the notion that you could absolutely, positively, 150% disagree with someone and still be enlightened by the disagreement. You know, like, oh my God, I totally disagree with what you're saying, but wow, it's a really interesting perspective and one that I hadn't thought of before. You know what I mean? So we still disagree, but there's a piece of your reality that is now a part of my landscape. And so in that we have sort of transcended the difference to do what I think it was Hartshorne talked about in his process that he called creative interchange. And he literally said that is one of the ways we make God present, you know, among us, is in those moments of just connecting. I just want to understand where you're coming from. Not trying to convince you to my point of view. I really want to create some space in my interior landscape to understand and to know you better. That never happens in the public sphere today. You know, it's about a conversation. Well, you know, I have a perspective and I'm trying to win somebody to my perspective. As opposed to how many times we just have a conversation with somebody we completely disagree with, I just want to understand, you know, where you're coming from is all. It's almost like we're afraid if we understand, we're going to lose our own moral high ground or something, you know, that it'll get on us and change us in some way. It will change us. We will be transformed. But not in ways that we're powerless over. I mean, it's not going to, I mean, unless these people are like hiding out as dementors or something and they're going to draw our souls out of our bodies. There may be some of those out there swimming around. I swear I've been up close to a few of them, but those aren't generally the people I engage in conversation.
So Phil and then Shelley and then Kathy.
I'm curious to know what you were discovering about the people who do go to your podcast, what it was the incentive that led them to go to a podcast which deals with the whole water, let's say.
So one thing we hear is appreciation that we don't stoke fear. Another thing we've heard is appreciation for reconnecting or attempting to reconnect people to basic humanity.
They like the nature of our conversation. I mean,
yes.
People find therein within the banter, we don't always agree on stuff, but it's a refreshingly different tone of conversation than so much of what is out there. Does that resonate, Chris?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I try to disagree with you rudely just to just to keep things spicy, but no, I'm teasing. those are the two things that struck me just off the top, this sense of you don't stoke fear and also reclaiming our humanity. Again, which is more fundamental than a political identity. Not that, you know, and I don't want to get all kumbaya about it, because there are real divisions and there are real tough conversations that our public sphere needs to engage in. But I just think, I think the more fundamental questions we disagree about tend to be moral. So let's put those conversations in the proper place.
Shelley.
Hey, everybody. So I confess I'm here today because in my comings and goings in my chaplaincy work, multiple times in a singular day, I hear what people are so very certain God has to say, or what they say in God's name is unequivocally true and certain and right. And I can leave a family or patient and drive 20 minutes and have a entirely different conversation about what God is so much saying, and I'm 110% sure, and my hands are holding onto that so tightly, there's not even a little bit of openness. So I'm here today for some community with people who maybe don't need to be so certain. So I'm here with gratitude, and I'm just confessing a moment of good self-care to connect with clergy and folk who say, I have room and openness and curiosity and appreciation for the conversation and not the confrontation in God's name. So it's not really a question, it's just a thank you for making it feel not so lonely in that work, and for the encouragement then in holding space for people to have such very wildly different ideas. It gives me just a bit of encouragement in the work.
You know, Shelley, that is, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for the work that you do. And thank you also for reminding me that that was one of the things that really belongs in the origin story. Because when Chris and I set out to do this work, and I had forgotten about this part, but when Chris and I set out to do this, one of the things we wanted to do was create a platform for religious voices that aren't heard from that often, right? So there's a lot of platforms out there for conservative and evangelical and, you know, those voices of certitude, and not so much airspace for those of us who prefer to live the questions, right? Assurance of things hoped for, substance of things unseen, you know, to dwell in that place together is sacred ground and a great place for community, right? Like, who wants to be in that alone?
Shelley, I also want to thank you for your words, and I would add this. This is what occurred to me as you were speaking, which is we aim, I think this is a creative tension, what I'm about to name, which is conviction and humility. So humility doesn't mean we just roll over or that we don't have conviction, and conviction doesn't mean certitude. You use the word certitude, which, you know, so I think a faithful place to be is holding both, because we want to come with conviction and a theological perspective has to say we come with conviction and we don't know it all. We need to learn. I mean, humility to me is this position of learning and curiosity, and I don't have the complete picture, even though I come with conviction. So to me, that's a very juicy, rich tension, creative tension.
That's a whole show right there.
Chris, in real ways, a piece of what you just named there is the work of ecumenical relationship. We do that work best when we come with our own clear sense of our theology and what shapes us, and also an openness to live in the questions and to live in the conversations and to say, I don't have all the pieces. I need you with me in this work to have those pieces. Really, really well said. Kathy, you're next.
Sure, thank you. I came on today because I got to know Chris a little bit through the Stitch Breathe Speak film he and Jan made. I was one of the quilters in the Sacred Allied Quilt Ministry and continued to help coordinate that. I really appreciate what Shana had to say a couple of people ago. I am home healing from a hip replacement revision, and being with people who have an openness and a curiosity is helpful. I will make a confession that right now my husband and I are on diametrically opposed political positions on most topics. And this has happened over the 40 years of our marriage, apparently. He has a sibling who became a Trump fanatic and has been essentially, in my opinion, poisoning the rest of his siblings. So it's wonderful to listen to people who have a different perspective, and the idea of making space to listen and at least be open to, I think, I don't know how you said it, Shana, but just to be open to understanding what the other person is saying. Not that it's part of might become part of my landscape, but not part of my belief or something. That was very helpful. And so I appreciate this group and listening and the opportunity to participate.
It's so hard right now because so much of what is out there is not simply idea. And I find myself having to distinguish between the two. There's ideas and thoughts and sort of ethics and, you know, sort of what's beyond. I mean, if you can engage people in conversation, because so often I find myself running into people who have talking points, but not information. So once I begin to ask a question, you know, let's just say, for example, Democrats are responsible for inflation. Well, if I start to ask the questions about, well, you know, what do you think the impact of COVID was on not only our national economy, but on the worldwide economy? And, you know, might some of that be impacting what's going on now? Now we've moved past the talking point. And since they don't have information, that's usually when I notice the volume of the conversation goes up, you know. So it is really, it's difficult. It's difficult. And again, knowing who you can have those conversations with that will create space for mutual understanding and really creating space for us to get to know one another, right? We don't have to think alike to love alike, but we got to be able to engage in those conversations with people who are open to hearing and receiving.
Chris and Shana, as we move into our last little bit here, you've talked about this a little bit in pieces, but I'm wondering what role you hope to play in shaping the conversations that the church is having right now. What role do you hope to play in the conversations that are shaping the church right now?
So just a little bit of context before I answer the question. I make it my business to be aware of American Christianity. And so when I respond to this question, I'm thinking of Protestantism writ large. The whole family of Protestant Christians who embraced modernity and the whole family that rejected modernity. I'm thinking of the Roman Catholic Church in America today. The divisions in our church, American Christianity, in the wider church, the big church, churches, those divisions map along political party divisions. We know this. That's a big fat fail for the church. It means we're enculturated to the political and not again, getting back to that whole sense of faith formation, being formed deeper. And I'm not going to claim that if we were formed in Christ that we would have equal opportunity political views. I'm not saying that. But it would look different, or it should look different, if we're formed more deeply as people of faith. So the project I see that What in God's Name is part of is something that the fruits of which are well beyond my lifetime, which is to regain trust, to regain a real authority, that's not power over, but is grounded in the deeper realities that we claim, in the deeper truths that we claim. Because for two reasons. One is that's good for Jesus, and we love Jesus, I do. And it's good for our country, and I love our country. I love what's possible in America. And I think a healthy America needs a healthy church. He needs a healthy Christian church. Not that that's the answer, but it's, up to me, a piece. So my vision is big. That's big. But it's really about planting trees. It's about things that will bear fruit decades from now.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to say is probably fairly similar. But for those of you who don't know, both of my parents are Jewish, were Jewish. They're both gone now. But I went to seminary as a Unitarian Universalist and chose a Christian seminary in order to overcome my fear of all things Christian. Overshot the mark a little bit, came out, got ordained in the United Church of Christ. And I'm back with the Unitarian Universalists based on a love of all religions, you know. So I'm going to speak to something, you know, beyond the Protestant church, and I'm going to come way out of my wheelhouse and boldly proclaim my belief that the role of faith communities is to be radically countercultural in every age and in every place, to be radically countercultural, to constantly run what is just mindlessly coming into being through a comb, or through, you know, through the test of, is it good for people? Is it healthy? Does it produce aliveness, fullness, and enable people to be fully self-expressed? And in order to do that, we are going to constantly be swimming against the stream of culture. And I think that's a pretty radical notion in today's world. We are looking way too much like the culture that surrounds us, and I'm not sure that's what God had intended. So we're going to need to work a little harder to figure that out, and then figure out how to manifest that.
Oh, friends, we are about 1 minute from 1 o'clock, and I feel like we could sit here and talk together all afternoon. But I want to honor folks' time, that we will close at an hour. And so it's our practice at the Council of Churches to try not to end anything we do without a word of hope in this moment. And so, Chris and Shana, I'll invite you each to leave us as we close today with a word of hope.
My word of hope is that the fish who becomes aware of the water suddenly has options, and that moral action creates space and creates the possibility for a different future. Like, seeing the water connects us to the possibility of doing something different.
So, Heidi, I liked the way you put it in the newsletter, the last newsletter, that the politics of the day with the midterm elections right around the corner has made the world seem very loud right now. And I've been feeling that for some time, and had turned back to a book called Restoring Faith, America's Religious Leaders Answer Terror with Hope. And this is a collection of writings by faith leaders that came about after 9/11. I don't know that it's an overstatement to say some of us are as terrified about what's coming next week as we were in the aftermath of 9/11. Talib Abdul Rashid, who's the leader of the Mosque of the Islamic Brotherhood out of Harlem, New York, finished evening prayers one night with this paragraph. He said, Let all people of faith cope with the aftermath of this tragedy by seeking divine help through patient perseverance and prayer. We must humbly open our hearts to all people and encourage others to do the same. For the arrogant and the haughty shall be brought low by the one who created us all. Let us pray, then work, for genuine reconciliation of human conflict through a pursuit of true justice for all people, guided by the higher principles we hold dear. Let that be our work.
Amen. A huge thank you to you, Shayna and Chris. Friends, thank you for being here today to be part of this conversation and embody the core values of What in God's Name, stay curious, go deep, shine bright. Blessings on your day, and you will receive a follow-up email from us with some follow-up from this conversation and connection to Chris and Shayna and their work. So thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Shalom.
If you like what you hear, help us spread the word. Subscribe to What in God's Name and leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Get on our mailing list at whatingods.com. We have big plans for initiatives and other partnerships. Help us out on Patreon at patreon.com/whatingods.